Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics. I'm your host for today's show, Stephanie Whitehead, and I'm joined again by a very special and return guest, Ms. Sarah Cook.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for returning. For those of you tuning in for the first time, I'm your podcasting laboratory leader, and I'm your mentor for today's show, along with Sarah Cook. The eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my other co-hosts bring you topics related to the laboratory and leadership to help you excel inside and outside of the laboratory. And I'm really excited for today's show because we are doing a sequel, a part two, to our episode number four, Lean on Me. So if you haven't checked that out, take a moment to go back, listen to season two, episode four, Lean on Me with Sarah Cook, where we were giving you some tidbits about managing lean, about doing your principles of lean in your laboratory and working smarter and not harder. I'm going to stop for a minute and give Sarah Cook a minute to reintroduce herself to our listeners and go over her bio and her CV, and then we'll get right into the show.
Hi, thank you. So I started my career in the laboratory, really doing research and development at a local university in Portland, Oregon. And then, of course, by chance, I discovered the clinical laboratory program at that same university. And so I completed that and I started doing microbiology and molecular science. I currently live in Rapid City, South Dakota, where I worked my way up at the local hospital here as a microbiologist. And then I moved up to being a laboratory quality and safety leader. And then I transitioned out of the laboratory to become a performance engineer, where I became a certified Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, focusing on process improvement opportunities in all areas of the healthcare system, including the laboratory. And about 6 months ago, I decided to take my skills to all industries. And now I'm a consultant for Pepper Foster Consulting. And so don't let anyone tell you that there's no room for growth and opportunity in the laboratory field. There's so much opportunity.
So I talk to so many laboratory professionals who are kind of on that hamster wheel of working on the bench, getting extra shifts, working every other weekend, and just feeling like there's nowhere else to go but being a lead or a supervisor. And so, you know what? Yep. I'm gonna put you in the hook right now, Sarah, because you've got to come back for a third time now that you've said that and talk about opportunities outside of the laboratory, because we could spend another 40 minutes just talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember going up in the lab and everyone telling me, you know, once you get in the lab, there's nowhere to go. There's no growth opportunities unless a leader or supervisor leaves or retires. And that's so far from the truth.
That is so far from the truth. And I know so many people right now who are going to school to do other things, which is fine if you have a different passion and you're using the laboratory field to get you through your healthcare journey in life. But if you truly just are leaving because you feel like there's not enough growth opportunities, that's not true. And we hope you'll reconsider after hearing our next podcast episode about life off of the bench or outside of the lab. I put her on the hook, you guys. Now she's got to come back. But today,
you got it.
Sarah and I are going to continue our conversation from episode four, like I said, Lean on Me, and discuss the principles of lean and really how you can use lean in your laboratory to measure, monitor, and sustain lab process improvements. And so in the last episode that we recorded, we really stressed how laboratories need to use data to drive their projects. Drive your projects. You know, if you feel like you have a problem with your turnaround times, if you feel like you have a problem with your hemolysis rate, if you think you are even over ordering or having a supply inventory problem, you need to first get the data to prove that you actually have a problem and benchmark where you are with that problem. And so today we're going to dive deeper into that with Sarah. So Sarah, right. As we drive deeper into this subject, a common model to use to as a strategy to improve processes is called the DMAIC, the D-M-A-I-C model. Can you discuss the five stages of the DMAIC for our crowd and really kind of go into how they can use it, what it stands for, and some advice and tips of how to use that to help them be successful in their laboratory at each phase?
Yeah, definitely. So as you mentioned, DMAIC is an approach to solving problems and making improvements. And so the first stage is define, and that's where you get specific and define what the opportunity or the problem is. You're going to start talking through what the goals are and the customer requirements, both internal or external, so lab caregivers, other departments, and patients. The next is measure. Here you're going to quantify the process performance, and you're going to start really diving into the details of the workflow or the process. And analyze, you'll start talking about the root causes and really diving into those and identifying those. And improvement, you're going to start to address and eliminate some of those root causes of the problem by putting some actual improvements in place. And in control, you'll work to sustain the improvement by monitoring the process. So now, when we go back and we talk about the tips and advice on how to be successful through each phase. So in Define, this is one of my favorite pieces of DMAIC because I don't know how many times I've worked on a project where the purpose of the effort or what the problem is wasn't clear or wasn't actually justified with objective information or data. So I've walked into a lot of projects where everyone at the table saying, this is a huge problem, this is a huge problem. But we never would have data or real information to back it up. And I don't want to discredit people's experiences and day-to-day, but you really, for people that aren't involved in those day-to-day activities, they really need to see the real objective information or data. So in this phase, I like to start with a SIPOC. So that's suppliers, inputs, process, outputs, and customers. So this is a really good activity to do with your project team. It's a good visual to get people thinking through who are your stakeholders, what's your scope, and even start creating a high-level process map. In addition to that, you know, you could use a typical charter document where you can start talking through this is a problem and how do I know, and start talking through what is the actual information or data that you have. In measure, you can take that SIPOC and start getting more specific about the workflow you're looking at. So who's involved in each step and using the data to bridge what's being done with the data that's collected. I like to use tools that are really easy to interpret, like run charts or histograms, depending on what the data that you have is. Run charts are used to examine the collected data for trends or patterns over a specific time frame, and they're excellent when analyzing data both before and after an improvement's been made. So in the analyze phase, you're actually examining the data collected and looking for those root causes of the process. So in this phase, I like to use a fishbone diagram or 6M exercise, and depending on the severity, you might even want to use a FMEA, which is it's a massive tool, and depending on the severity, you might want to go down that route. It's a really strong root cause analysis tool. And improve based on what you've learned in terms of the potential root causes. This is when you can start saying, all right, what improvements do we want to put in place? I like to use a pick chart, which is basically you're saying, all right, what are all the improvements that we want to put in place? And you start prioritizing them with your team based on impact and the effort. In control, once you determine the path forward, the hardest part will be to sustain your improvements, hands down. So examine what improvements have been effective, try and put some mistake proofing in place so that you can make it easy to do the right thing and hard to do the wrong thing. Sometimes it's a lot easier to see those mistake proofing or poke yoke opportunities once you've put some improvements in place. And again, I like to use run charts. They're just an easy way to interpret what's happening and what changes have been made or improvements to your process. Now, that being said, I think one piece that's important throughout every one of these phases is to use daily huddles or a lean daily management board to communicate your improvement efforts. So here is where you can share the information collected to help everyone understand why certain actions are being put in place, getting feedback from the lab caregivers, what's working, what's not working, from the people that are the subject matter experts. And we need to remember that lean is about respect for people. And so having that transparency, that open communication and feedback will go a long way for your improvement success.
I really like two things you said. One, the mistake proof. Like, I feel like that's just a coined phrase. I want to tweak that. Because there's so many opportunities in the laboratory when you're doing any process to, you know, skip a step. We change procedures sometimes, and you've got PRM people who don't work all the time, may not know that something has changed. And so how can you make things mistake proof? Really that goes back to the patient safety just culture model, where you're, you know, not identifying a person, but making the environment and the practices and the processes easy for anybody to step in and do. And so you're not targeting that person. You're working on fixing the processes. Like you said, making it hard to do the wrong thing. I really like that. And then when you said lean is about respect for people, because so many times we can get kind of rigid in how we are trying to address problems. And going back to, you know, our frontline workers and respect for their day-to-day work and respect for the fact that they are the ones out there on the bench, getting things from the tube system, answering the phones, talking to nurses, and it's about making their job as easy as possible.
Exactly. And it's just like what you said. I mean, we want to make it easy to do the right thing and trust that no one's intentionally trying to skip a step, and we just want to really support people as they kind of walk through. And I don't know how many times I've been involved in improvements where the feedback is, we've already tried that, it didn't work. And my statement back to that is, what if we try it? Can we just try it? And just really, I mean, do those small experiments.
Right. So I think you drove home a lot of good points about this really commonly used model. But for somebody who may be new to a management position or may just be learning about lean, can you describe maybe a laboratory situation where you've seen this model used and it be successful, something to drive it back to usefulness in the laboratory?
Yeah. So many, but I think one that really stands out in my mind is when I was working for a laboratory and they have been consistently receiving a deficiency in the CAP general requirement 54400 for personnel records. And so we decided as a laboratory to initiate a DMAIC structured improvement. And so for the define phase, we talked through what's the problem and how do we know, right? We had multiple incomplete personnel records at any given time based on audits that were completed. We'd also been cited by CAP in several pre-inspections and during the actual CAP inspections. So we had that information starting out. And so for measure, we started using that information from the CAP inspection and the audits performed in the last 3 months or so. And so we started working through a process map of the moment someone was onboarded and up to a 30-day mark. So when we'd all have the required documents in their personnel folder. And we started talking about, you know, who is involved in each step and their role throughout the process. And analyzed, we started using that information from the process map, and we started performing a fishbone diagram to identify some root causes. And we found information that was incredibly helpful. So first, there were unclear roles and expectations when it came to updating personnel records, right? It was sometimes the lead, sometimes it was the supervisor who would manage this process. And sometimes they didn't talk to each other. So the deadline to update records or that personnel folder would come and go, and no one really knew. There's no real standard checklist that was personalized to the laboratory in place. So we would all, quote, know what was needed in the personnel file, but we hadn't actually really talked about it. There was an understanding that yeah, you need their certification, you need some transcripts, right, and some competencies, but there's actually quite a few items that have to be in that personnel file. So the next thing is that we have huge thick files for someone who was in the laboratory for 20 years. And in the midst of all that, we'd only have one required document because the assumption was that file is so thick and it's large. So there's an assumption that we have more than enough information in there, right? Mm-hmm. And the last piece was each supervisor would keep their team's records at their desk. So our folders were in multiple locations where the records were stored, some locked in a cabinet. Sometimes caregivers would have their own personnel files in their own possession, like in their drawers or lockers. When we got to improvement, we decided to put, kind of prioritize based on impact and effort. And what we started putting in place is electronic, putting some of these documents in electronically. We started to designate specific roles that would be responsible for auditing and also being clear with leadership about who was collecting what and in what time frame. And the personnel files there would be a paper checklist and also a virtual checklist that said, hey, these are the documents, I'm signing off on this, here's the date. And then we decided to put in place regular audits. So that we'd ensure in the long term that everything would be updated in those files. And so in the control phase, we had put many improvements in place, but only after speaking with leadership, having those one-on-ones, talking with caregivers, because it would be a change, right? In some cases, caregivers would be giving back their personnel folders. Sometimes they were uncomfortable with that because they had things in there they didn't want other people to see. So we really had to take in consideration that it isn't you're checking the boxes and putting these improvements in place, right? You're acknowledging that this is going to be a change for a lot of people. And in some cases, we had challenges and we had missing required documents for caregivers who have been working in the laboratory for years and we're having to ask them to go back and request their transcripts or their certification documents. And so we had to acknowledge that there would be a process to getting all these improvements in place, but also monitoring and doing those audits. And for the first time in several inspections, that laboratory was not cited for that deficiency. Wow. And that was such a huge accomplishment. That was one that a lot of the laboratory was watching and they were so excited. They weren't paranoid about, well, which folders are those inspectors going to grab, right? Mm-hmm. It was just like, yeah, we feel great about it. Go for it, mm-hmm. It was awesome.
And so much about Lean can give you confidence in these things, right? What laboratory hasn't struggled with personnel files? But one thing I will say is it sounds like you guys were able to find a really standardized process. And one thing I'll say to the listeners is if you can find a process like the one that Sarah is describing that works for, 100 staff member, it's so easy to add staff members because you've already got your process down. So, you can do 100 of something and add 20 more, add 30 more, add 40 more. It's fine because I already have my standard process down. You can add as much volume to that as you want. And so if you're managing a little bit right now, figure out how to manage that effectively because more will come. I mean, we're in a pandemic, So. Yes. What I really was interested in is that last step where you said control, because there are some innate controls around working in the laboratory, right? Like you mentioned, CAP inspections. So many labs are inspected also by the AABB or ASHI or, the FDA. And so I want to dive a little bit deeper into how you monitor each project to make sure you sustain it, because you can do a project and if it falls off in 3 months, then you've put in all that work for nothing. So that last piece of control, tell us why that is so important in monitoring for continuous improvement and what's involved in the ongoing monitoring. We put in all this work, we get our staff involved. Mm-hmm. We fix a project. We want to make sure it stays fixed for the long term.
Right. So that, I mean, and that's so common, you know, it's that experience of having that really positive data or that noticeable impact initially, right? It looks good. It's been 2 months. Everything's going great. I think we're good. And that isn't necessarily wrong. I mean, it's important to set that time frame, but you have to remember that when you're doing those improvements, there's a lot of attention and focus on it, right? People are watching. Maybe you're talking through it and you're showing the results of the audit at your Lean Daily Management Board. So let's say 3 months go by, everyone's moved on to the next thing, or they're focusing their attention, you know, just back to their day-to-day, and it's not intentional, but the process can slip, right? It's a change and it can take time. So it's important to continuously monitor in a time frame that makes sense for you, right? And that's really where it's key to put those safeguards in place. And it's so helpful at this stage because you're seeing what's working, what's not, what can we do to make sure that it's going to be easy to do the right thing and hard to do the wrong things. And so here you're putting those tweaks in place as the process moves forward, and we're trying to pursue perfection in this process. Make sure that you share the information with those people that are involved so that you can reinforce the purpose and the why behind new processes. And so what's involved is really setting that time frame for how long you want to monitor that process. And so in the example that I had earlier, it was decided that those audits would be done, you know, weekly and then eventually monthly. So that was the time frame they decided to use. They would never stop doing audits, essentially. It's important to use a transparent or visual method to share the results of the improvement, because you've asked people to make these changes, right? So it's important that they can see, well, what difference did it make that I did this different thing? And really using visual data like the run charts, you know, you're making the decision when to react and when not to react. So if you see a small deviation from your audit results or your goal, that might be the nature of the process, right? Just be sure to continuously monitor for trends. When you do see something significant in the data, be sure to act quickly and really look for those root causes. How did this process fail you? Really looking at that rather than what did you do wrong? What did you do? And that ongoing monitoring will help ensure that a long-term improvement was actually made rather than a short-term fix, essentially.
Right, right. And I know for myself, I've got a little bit of a lean background, nothing like you, but there will be times where I listen to a podcast or listen to a TED talk or even go to a conference, and I come back to my department so excited with all of these, you know, tools that I've learned. And then you walk into the lab and you're like, you kind of got like your superhero cape on. You're like, let's change everything, you know? And you're like,
I've been there.
And then all of the people at the bench are like, oh, rolling their eyes at you. You tell you just got back from a conference. Yep. I guess my next question is, what advice would you have to a lab leader on how to get their frontline staff engaged and involved and motivated in some of these lean thinking tools?
Well, don't do what you did. I think I read one or two lean books and I was like, we're going to do all of these things. And it was probably one of the biggest mistakes that I had ever made when I was really practicing lean. So we have to remember, lean is not successful without respect for people and the people doing the work, right? We've read it before. So leaders are often in a position to put out fires, right? But right. What would happen if leaders became those problem framers instead of problem solvers? We want leadership to help define and coach and prioritize so that you can allow those lab caregivers, the subject matter experts, to do the work of looking for the root causes and potential actions for improvement. So really change your mindset to allow the lab to solve their own challenges. And this really comes down to empowering the lab to make those improvements and really gaining that support they need from leaders so that they are successful, Now, on the flip side, I've experienced a huge difference in how opportunities were managed when laboratory staff had gathered data, right? They had done the due diligence of collecting that information over a certain period of time, not when they were, you know, data that only came from a morning run or something that said, hey, look, this happened, but really looking at the data over time and creating a problem statement and presented some suggestions on how to move forward. And I know that lab staff are totally overworked and underpaid, and there's no doubt about that. However, helping to solve these problems is not only about improving the patient experience or the quality of results, but also your day-to-day. So your input and involvement is critical, and you know the workflow better than anyone. So really, it's important to feel empowered to make those improvements.
Yeah, if you think about how much of your day-to-day is about, like you said, putting out fires or managing drama or managing, you know, things that just pop up, it's almost like you're playing whack-a-mole sometimes, you know, and I always, you know, coach new leaders and tell them, you know, that's why you're there. You're there to kind of be the resolve. You're kind of there to be the person who is in charge of leading the laboratory through those things. But like you said, the frontline staff know what they need to make their jobs easier. So empowering them and cultivating that culture where they feel comfortable and they have a process to bring issues, try to work with you to solve it, resolve it. And then you're providing that support to your team as they're going through solving these problems and maybe guiding them on the best ways to resolve them. You know, really is going to help your laboratory long-term. You mentioned some books that you had read, like you read like a couple of books and then came back and was like, we're going to change all of these things. So what advice would you have to scientists or frontline staff on how to increase their lean process knowledge? Are there books or are there podcasts you really like, or are there talks you really listen to?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, if you're looking for information online, I really like ASQ. So that site has a ton of resources and templates, you know, case studies. A lot of it's free. You just put in your email address. I also love podcasts. So this one, of course, and I really enjoy the Healthcare Quality Cast. That's hosted by Jarvis Gray. Also, My Favorite Mistake, that's hosted by Mark Graben. And I think a really powerful book that I've read is Measures of Success. That's authored also by Mark Graben. And that, I don't know how many times I was involved in projects where if the data moved in a certain direction, you know, let's say length of stay would increase, you know, the next day at the morning huddle, you'd find out that length of stay had increased by a day or something, and everyone would just react. And that can be an emotional roller coaster for a lot of people. And if turnaround time, you know, might have gone out a little bit out of, you know, what it's supposed to be, I think we have to learn when to react, and also probably most importantly, when not to react, so that, and also what to do when you are reacting, right? Don't, you know, make sure that you're looking at what's the root cause, what caused this deviation. Rather than, you know, looking at it and saying people aren't going fast enough, someone messed up somewhere, and really learning more about how to take that approach.
Right, because when you're doing these, things that you're describing, then you're not kind of running around with your hair on fire. You're taking a really systematic approach to solving problems. And so I think staff can start to disrespect or not pay attention to all of these, you know, reactions that are so, you know, knee jerk. You can almost seem a little bit like Chicken Little, like, oh, there we go again. We got to change this and it's going to change right back. You want staff to respect the process improvement process and trust that it will work and that it will actually improve the process.
Yep, completely.
So, Sarah, you've given us a lot of good information, but what final piece of advice or tip would you leave the listeners with today?
I think that, you know, the lean principle that I love the most is respect for people. And that's not just leadership. not just lab personnel on the bench, it's everyone. And when that is in place, or at least there's some attention to it, right? People are working on that and trying to, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt that people aren't trying to fail, people aren't trying to do the wrong thing, and really just focus on intent. I think that if we have that, we have that respect in place, that's a really good foundation for improvement. I mean, it's so important.
Right. It comes down to respect and communication. Sarah, I mentioned this to Sarah before, but our last episode, Lean On Me, I'm going to keep promoting that also, episode 4 from season 2, Lean On Me, was one of our most popular episodes from season 2. So I'm going to give us a little break and round of applause for Sarah and Stephanie. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in and downloading that episode at the rate that you did. What that tells us is that, you know, people really want this information and people are really looking at ways to work smarter and not harder and really put in some lasting, sustainable process improvements into their laboratory. So we're happy to provide that. And because it was the most popular episode, I'm sure the listeners want to know how they can stay connected to you, continue to learn from you, get more advice from you, or even be mentored. So can you let the listeners know how they can stay connected with you, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. So please find me on LinkedIn. That's usually where I'm at. I don't really look at anything else anymore. But I'd love to hear about your journey through Lean and Six Sigma, or, you know, Lean and improvements that you're trying to make. And I know that when I first started out, I started to collect a lot of mentors to help me when I was, you know, learning about how to, I just kind of went about everything wrong initially. I lost so much trust in the lab, you know, and so I had to start over. And I had a lot of good people in my corner who walked me through it, you know, and started to look back on it and learn, right? And so It's so important if you get kind of lost and you want some guidance or support, you know, please reach out to me anytime.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the audience tuning in for another episode with our special guest, Sarah Cook, sharing tips on lean daily management. Be sure to check out our monthly chat and engage with us and other laboratory professionals about discussions that are important to you all. We want to talk about what you need us to talk about. So if you like what you heard today and you want to listen to our previous shows, don't forget to subscribe to our show at directimpactbroadcasting.com. Send us an email, reach out to us. You can also listen to us on Apple, Spotify, or Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Be sure to follow me and Sarah at Stephanie Y. Whitehead on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. And until then, please tune in for another episode of the Elaborate Topics next week, and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.